Welcome to this latest Alborada podcast. My name is Pablo Navarrete, founder and co-editor of Alborada. As I hope this podcast makes clear, with the mainstream media's systematic misreporting of the progressive forces in Latin America and elsewhere, the role of independent journalism has never been more important. You can support Alborada's program of podcasts, articles and events by becoming a regular supporter or through a one-off donation at www.alborada.net/support. Many thanks to those of you who support our work already. Your support is essential. Before you listen to this podcast, I wanted to let you know that the pre-recorded contribution by one of our panelists, the Colombian journalist Mónica del Pilar Uribe, founder of the UK-based bilingual media outlet, The Prisma, is included at the end. I hope you enjoy this recording of our event, Latin America, Mainstream Media Misrepresentation and the Independent Media Fight Back.
I am not in any way an expert on Latin American independent media. I do work with Declassified UK, Alborada, and The Prisma as members of the Independent Media Association. And what I hope we get from this session is that we focus at least as much on the fight back in the media and how we can mobilise that, utilise that to actually achieve the changes we want to see, as much as we talk about the misinformation from the media, because I think hopefully most of us will be quite well versed in the misinformation and the tactics that are used and why they're used, and hopefully we can focus on how we create change. So yeah, okay, well, I'll tell you a bit about the Independent Media Association. Essentially, the idea was to form a trade union for radical and independent media in the UK, and we're actually setting up sister organisations in other countries. There's about 70 members at the moment. We're aiming for about 150 members, and we define independent media as media that is both regulated or has all of its journalists in the NUJ, the National Union of Journalists, or plus it is independently funded, i.e. not backed by the state or backed by multinational corporations, which, as you can imagine, leads to the main concern for all of our members, for all of this radical independent media: how do we get funded well enough to do the work that we need to do? And that's one of the key challenges that we always end up talking about, we try to address. But there are other key challenges, and I'm pretty sure we're going to come across them in this session today, one of which is how misinformation is spread through social media networks. Google, Twitter, Facebook, they have sent, during the 2019 election, for instance, many of our members received notices from Facebook saying, your reach is going to be ended until the end of the election period. They just said you're not allowed to essentially speak to your own audience. Since that period, and since we've known through Twitter and other arenas that there's not only deplatforming, but there's also just basically deprioritizing your work in the algorithm, so that even if people follow you, they never see your work. We've had to start working on ways to communicate with our audiences directly, mainly through email. We're also working on Telegram, we're also working on other things. But it's worth noting that if you follow independent radical media of any form, sign up to their email list, because if you think you're going to get them in your feed on whatever social media platform you use, there's going to come a point where the social media platform, because it's in their interests, are going to stop you seeing that information, that really useful information that brilliant journalists like Matt and Natalia do, and Pablo do as well. So with all of that, and that was really my very best effort at padding this time on a Saturday afternoon, we'll crack on with the session. So for those of you who didn't catch it, I'm Thomas Barlow, I'm the chair of the session, I'm from the Independent Media Association. And I'm going to introduce the panel in the order they speak. So Matt Kennard is a co-founder and chief investigator at Declassified UK, a news outlet investigating British foreign policy. He was a fellow and then director at the Centre for Investigative Journalism in London. He has worked as a staff writer for the Financial Times in Washington, D.C., New York and London. He is the author of two acclaimed books, Irregular Army and The Racket. I can say both those books are brilliant. DC UK are absolutely fantastic. Please do follow them. And again, sign up for their email list. And as we talked about, if you can spare it, these organisations need your support to change the stories you're telling. so please do support them. Natalia Urban is a Brazilian journalist and correspondent based in Scotland. You can see her work at Brazil Wire, Jacobin Brazil, and as a commentator at Brazil 24/7. And Monica Del Pilar Uribe is founder of and director of, and editor-in-chief of the Prisma, the multicultural, the Latin multicultural newspaper in the UK. She is an author, journalist, editor, speaker, interpreter, and documentary filmmaker. And quite frankly, she sent me a bio that I could not read out. We wouldn't have the time. She's fantastically accomplished. And we will be getting a video from her because she's unable to join us today. And of course, joining us is Pablo from Alborada, who has set up this session. And again, please do follow Alborada if you're interested in Latin American politics, if you're interested in really getting the truth of what's going on, and also great discussions on different perspectives on Latin American politics as well. Pablo will speak more to their great work, but please do follow all of these, get on their email list, and if you can spare money, do so with that. With all of that done, you've heard enough from me. I'm just some guy here. Matt, please, kick us off.
Cool. Thank you, Thomas. Thomas is not just some guy as well. He's a very important person in the alternative media industry in the UK, which is growing and exciting, actually. We form part of that, but obviously Alborada and Brazil Wire are major parts of that as well. But today, I think it would be best to talk about, I can provide some kind of insight into what it's like covering Latin America as an independent journalist, and what happens, the kind of pushback you get when you do that. We started Declassified in 2019 basically because there is zero quality, rigorous, critical journalism on British foreign policy in the UK. Zero. I mean, The Guardian used to provide some sort of function up till Catherine Viner took over, really, in 2013, I think it was. It was never great. It's always been an establishment newspaper populated by Oxbridge private school establishment types, but they had places for maverick reporters and places for reporters that didn't buy into the state ideology, and they've completely gone away now. So it's a problem for any kind of democracy if you don't have any kind of reporting in the mass media on its role in the world, especially if it's one like Britain, which obviously has a historic empire, but the great lie is that the empire died after the Second World War took a couple of decades, but the idea is that the British Empire died and it hasn't. We are now a junior partner to the US, but once you start looking into all this stuff, you see that the imperial operations of Britain are rampant, really, in terms of coups, in terms of exporting and enforcing neoliberalism around the world. Also, we have hugely powerful intelligence agencies like GCHQ, which Edward Snowden says is even more outrageous than the NSA in what it does. Then you've got MI6. Now, these are institutions that are huge, have a massive global footprint, and literally have zero mainstream coverage. And actually, to be honest with you, very little alternative media coverage as well of the intelligence agencies. So we saw that. We thought this is a problem for democracy. We're going to solve, try and do our part to solve that in any way we can. And it's been amazing, actually, to see what kind of impact we've had. Because Declassified started as me and Mark Curtis, the historian and journalist. And then we brought on Phil Miller, who's an amazing reporter, and we brought on Vicky Thomas, who is does everything else, basically. She runs the organisation. But there's four of us, two reporters, me and Phil, and I'm not even full-time. And we've, over the past 3 years, really, I think, changed the conversation on a couple of issues. One is not related to Latin America, but the Yemen war, which Phil's done most work on. A British war, which has caused the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. And we are integral players. BAE Systems employee, a former one, said that the Saudi air fleet would be grounded within 2 weeks if the British withdrew their support. So this is serious stuff, you know. This is the millions of kids on the brink of starvation. So, but that's one issue. And I focus more on Latin America. Sorry, I'm beating around the bush here, but I'll get into Latin America. I'll focus on a couple of investigations we did. One was on the coup in Bolivia in 2019. When Evo Morales was ousted in a military coup, and basically there was zero coverage of that in the UK media. There was some in The Guardian actually, but it was pretty rubbish. Sort of got everything wrong, didn't critically analyse the propaganda that was coming out of the Bolivian military and all its Western backers. And I got some documents from the Foreign Office which showed how integral the British were to that coup. There had been zero work done on that, and there would up to now have been zero work unless I'd done this investigation. But what it showed was that the ambassador in La Paz, Jeff Glenkin, had he'd taken in to the embassy, well, actually not the embassy, his own residence. He'd taken in this computer engineer that was alleging that Evo Morales had overseen a fraud in the election. He was quite a prominent figure at that time, and he was worried about his safety, so the British ambassador took him in. This only came out after the coup. The document showed that the Foreign Office had transferred money to an Oxford-based company to, quote, exploit lithium reserves a month after Evo Morales had fled the country. It also showed that the UK was acting as a, quote, strategic partner to the military regime. So the story, I think the story was quite a good one. It was kind of an anatomy of the coup. But what was more interesting for me was the reaction. Now, not a word of it went huge. It went viral in Bolivia. There was sort of cartoons done in the newspapers. It was on the front pages of even the right wing Bolivian newspapers. The ambassador Glenkin was called in by the Bolivian foreign minister Rogelio Macha and asked to do a report. But interestingly, not one newspaper has ever written it. This was a full-on diplomatic kerfuffle. Had implications for the UK relationship with Bolivia. Also had implications for UK corporations that were looking to get their hands on the lithium that is in Bolivia, because it kind of announced a new paradigm in the relationship between Bolivia and the UK. So even wherever you stand on the political spectrum, it was an important story. Not one word has ever been mentioned about it in the mainstream media. And this goes again and again and again for every story. For example, in Venezuela, myself and John McAvoy, who also works for Declassified, he's a great reporter, we did a story about the Westminster Foundation for Democracy, which is a kind of Orwellian name for that organisation. But them and a couple of other UK institutions which were trying to overthrow the Venezuelan government. Again, the foreign minister called in the UK ambassador, posted a video clip of it on Twitter, created some like a massive kerfuffle, but not one word has ever been mentioned in the UK mainstream media about it, which is amazing. The obedience of the mainstream journalists is unbelievable, and it also shows that this is the most potent propaganda for a technique in the Western world. We don't have usually, well, apart from like some of the tabloids, we don't have the broadsheets openly lying. What they do is they leave out any information which contradicts the state ideology or the state line. That's how propaganda really works in this country. And you see that, I see that all the time with what I do, because a lot of the stories I do are easy because the information's out there. It's just no one's looking there. No one's looking for information which will contradict the state ideology. They're only looking for information which will back it. So I think that it's vital in the imperial capitals, like London, Washington, that independent media covers what our countries, our governments do in the world. I think it's especially important in Latin America, because for me, I think Latin America is the great hope of humanity, really. I mean, we've got existential crises right now in terms of climate change, nuclear war, all the possibilities with Ukraine. And the only place in the world where real liberation leaders that are representing social movements, representing the people, are rising up and getting into power is Latin America. You have it with Lula recently in Brazil. I mean, it's just a litany of it. Bolivia, Ecuador, formerly Mexico. It's just, there's nowhere else in the world. So I think if we're going to be saved as a species, it's going to start, or it has started, in Latin America. So it's very important that we protect the advances that are being made by the people of Latin America and the leaders of Latin America. And it really is quite amazing that we have no media in this country which even promotes or even talks about it. For example, I always say this, and people probably get bored with me saying it, but we have no mainstream left media in this country. New Statesman and The Guardian, if they were left media, would cover what is happening in Latin America. You don't see a word about it. You never see anything in the New Statesman about the liberation movements which are coming into government in Latin America. That's because they're not left, they're establishment media. So I think it's vital that we support and build alternative media, because I'll just finish with this. I interviewed Rafael Correa last year and Evo Morales in Bolivia, and both of them said to me, I didn't prompt them, both of them said unprompted, that the biggest obstacle to progressive change is the hold of the oligarch, what they call the oligarchical media, which is the oligarchical media. In Latin America they're talking about, but it's no different. It's quite obvious in Latin America. I've lived in Latin America. Like, if you go somewhere like Honduras, the oligarch, two oligarchs and the two main papers, like, that's very obvious. But in a more sophisticated sense, it's the same here. And we will not have progressive change, or we cannot protect progressive change when it comes about properly, if the whole information system is owned by oligarchs, owned by rich corporations, and owned by people who have a vested interest in destroying liberation movements. So I think that everyone who is creating independent media is on the front line of that change. And it's also, I'll say one more thing. I think in Latin America as well, there's a lot of amazing independent media coming up. Pagina 12 in Argentina, there's La Jornada in Mexico. I don't know if anyone checks that out. I used to live in Mexico and I read that every day and I couldn't believe it. It's a mass media newspaper. It reaches hundreds of thousands of people, but it's got no advertising. And it does really good investigations. It will do like a 16-page supplement on poverty in Mexico or homelessness or something like that. It's a really, reading La Jornada, you really kind of understand the possibilities when you have a critical media outlet which is reaching a mass audience. It's a powerful thing. So we're building it now. The UK is one of the most exciting places in the world, funnily enough, because I don't say that about the UK very much about anything, but on alternative media, we are actually at the forefront of lots of things happening. But we're at the start, and we're going to get more and more attacks. That's the thing. Like, at the moment, our power is less, is quite small compared to the mainstream, but that's changing. And for example, we've come under significant attack because of these diplomatic kerfuffles we've caused, which is a problem for the UK government, because they own most of the media in this country. So when you've got media that is actually uncovering what they're doing and causing a problem for them, then they come back at you. So I think that independent media is the future. Everyone should support it by signing up to Declassified, but also Alvorada and Brazil Wire and the Independent Media Association. Whatever it is, I think that it's important that we all know that, like Evo and Rafael Correa said, that is that progressive change, real progressive change across the world will start with independent grassroots media.
Brilliant. Thank you, Matt. So, Natalia, can you talk about the media situation in Brazil, and especially independent media, and what's that relation there? Because it's politically, I'm sure everyone in this room is very interested in what's going on in Brazil constantly, and it's hugely important that we actually get correct information about what's going on.
Thank you so much. I would like to start talking of why Brazil Wire was created. And Matt was 100% on point, saying that the UK was never held accountable, and how the British media do state propaganda. But more than that, they use their international, especially in the case of, being more very specific, the case of Brazil. At Brazil Wire, we started the website because we needed a counterpoint. We need to dispute narratives. We had the so-called progressive, liberal British media clapping at a coup that we were facing. They were trying to normalize fascists in Brazil. They were trying to normalize all the horrors that, in the end, we end up suffering, because for them it's easy. If something is bad there, it's papers that they are selling here. Their bosses will be happy. The people who are financing their outlets will be happy. But for us, it's our lives, and so they don't care. And for many years, this was an ongoing problem. So we realized, not me, but then Craig and Brian Meyer, my colleagues at Brazil Wire, they noticed that we did not have anyone talking about Brazil in English. And what we have like as a joke in Brazil, that the Brazil with Z is ruining the Brazil with an S, that is the Brazil for Brazilians. And that's why we are Brazil Wire with an S, because we are talking in English, we are speaking English, but we are doing with a Brazilian counterpoint of what is happening there. So for many years, we are being called out as the lunatics, as people who were like spreading conspiracy theories when we talk about the participation of the United States in the coup in Brazil, in the car wash operation. And we were one of the first outlets in Brazil that talk about Brazil, and specifically about British imperialism in Brazil. No one else was talking about the role that the UK government played on the ascension of the far right in Brazil. And that, I'm not saying just about the UK government, but also the UK state media played on not just like normalizing, but saying that it would be good, that they are not so bad. Actually, it's time to have a change, because like Lula said himself to me, Brazil is getting too big, too powerful for them, and they don't want, they never want to have us being too powerful or too big or anything. They need us to be down so they can exploit us. And I think the role that independent media in Brazil in specific, and what, as Brazil Wire, even though we are writing in English, we are part of it, was like the rehabilitation of Lula and bringing into people the actual story, that there was like a complex net of like intrigues and net and nonsense and fake news that tried to destroy the role that Brazil was playing and bringing more of an anti-imperialist South America, a unified South America, and they, of course, they did not want it. And of course, they wanted our resources. So they want the oil, they want the mining. So for them, it was much easier to use their media lackeys to do their dirty work. I'm saying that let's just close our eyes and let Brazil disappear and burn. But we resisted, not just us as Brazil Wire, but the other medias in Brazil that I'm part of, that I'm very proud to be part of. We work for many years since the coup to bringing people the truth, to bringing people closer to Latin America. I do that. I'm very proud in Brazil to say that I have the biggest show on YouTube about Latin America. Bringing Brazil more closely to the other Latin American countries, the progressive media in Brazil, the independent media in Brazil, now is was so vital for the election of Lula that now we are in taking another step. Now, Brazil 247, the channel and the media that I'm part of Brazil, we have over 1 million subscribers on YouTube. We have over 30 million hits on our website. Always bringing news, not just about Brazil, but about everything from a progressive working class leftist perspective, which is very important. And also, I would like to say that when Lula realized how social media was being used against him, not just against him, but the Workers' Party, it was too late. We lost the 2018 elections because of social media, essentially. So now the government is doing the opposite. Now, if they have their own cabinet of hate, like we said in Brazil that Bolsonaro had, we have to have our own version of it. That's why Lula government said, well, we're going to have the cabinet of love. We're going to have our own social media team. We're going to have our own influencers. We're going to have our own people doing the online marketing and dealing with those platforms that are essentially against us. At Brazil Wire, we are shadow banned from Twitter since 2021 and from Facebook since God knows when. We have been hacked 3 times only during the election month. And we have basically no support whatsoever because we are independent, so we don't have anyone to complain about the fact that we are attacked all the time. So I think that's why it's very important for us, and I say this to the Classified, to Alborada, and to other media outlets that also deal with Latin America. That's why it's so important for us to work together, because we are covering similar situations in different countries, but essentially our enemy, or the people we are writing about as the enemy, are the same as the establishment, as the capital, as the countries that still see us as colonies. So that's why, again, repeating what Matt said, support independent media. We need your help. We need more people reading our content, because we're not just like doing a different version of what mainstream media is doing. We are doing something completely new. And thanks to the work that many people like Matt, like Pablo did, my country is not run by a fascist again. So I'm very thankful for the independent media. Thank you.
The microphone, sadly, is for podcast recording. It's not something that is attached to the speakers.
But we'll release this as a podcast, yes. And maybe we'll embed this if anyone wants.
And could be released as a video as well. So,
yeah, exactly.
So if you can, sign up for the session and give us your contact details, and we'll send you this link for Monica. On the upside, glass half full, it means there'll be more time for questions with the excellent speakers we've got here now. So I'll move on to Pablo, and please do check out this video, though, after the session.
Yeah. So, yeah, thanks a lot, Thomas. And, it's really great to talk on this panel with Natalia and Matt, two journalists that I have immense respect for their work, which has really, contributed so much to challenging that narrative that we get, as Matt and Natalia have explained, that narrative we get from the mainstream Western media on Latin America, which, as Matt said, it's basically, on the one part, censorship by omission. And I'd be more critical on the actual coverage that they have engaged in, which I think is just outright bad faith reporting on the left and the progressive forces in Latin America. And in that, I think it's really important. Personally, my take is that, as Matt has said with The Guardian, it's really important for me that The Guardian is really at the vanguard, almost, of bad faith reporting and dishonest reporting on Latin American progressive forces. It certainly was something, and this is something in a way that led me to create Alborada as a platform and Alborada Films as a production in 2009, because I lived in Venezuela for nearly 2 years in 2005. And again, I kind of tell this anecdote a lot, and I probably might have heard it, but I encountered The Guardian's first Latin American correspondent at that time for like 25 years. I think Richard Gott had been the previous correspondent, and he'd left. And in 2005, because of the so-called pink tide, the first wave, The Guardian made the decision to send a new regional correspondent to Caracas. And he asked to meet me because I was working, amongst other things, for John Pilger, the documentary filmmaker, on a documentary called The War on Democracy. And we met, and it was, and I've said this a lot, but I grew up, my parents are Chilean political refugees. I grew up in a political left-wing household. But in 2005, and I studied, at SOAS, a left-wing university, so I was kind of steeped in leftism. But in 2005, when I went to live in Venezuela, I thought The Guardian was a progressive newspaper. And it was only really that kind of realization of, meeting this person, him informing me that he knew nothing about the region, that he didn't speak Spanish, and then, more importantly, seeing his reporting on what was taking place in Venezuela under Chavez, that it became a bit of a kind of epiphany for me in terms of what The Guardian's real motivations and agendas were with regards to Venezuela, but more broadly with regards to the transformations taking place in Latin America. So that kind of was my sort of coming of age, in a way, with regards to how I viewed the so-called left, however you want, The Guardian is considered by many a left-wing newspaper. And I think we really need to sort of be clear that The Guardian is not only isn't a left-wing newspaper, but is basically an enemy of progressive forces, certainly in Latin America. And I think it's something that has been clearly expressed again
during Jeremy Corbyn's leadership of the Labour Party, where I think perhaps some people got that realisation with The Guardian, with that episode, something that I got with the left, you know, with the Chavez experience, and at the same time, actually, as they were misreporting consistently and systematically what was going on in Venezuela, there was in neighbouring Colombia, you had a far-right government, which was shamefully supported by the new Labour government here at the time, a far-right government that was killing, you know, thousands of social activists, that was the number one place where trade unionists were murdered in the world, and was basically waging war on any on all progressive forces. And The Guardian at that time was came out with an advertorial in partnership with the Colombian regime of Álvaro Uribe. So that really, I mean, what more evidence do you need about what The Guardian's real like motivations were? So you know, Alvarado has sprung from that, I guess, frustration, to put it mildly, at the kind of disinformation and misreporting around. And I think it's really important that we have to create these new spaces because of that misinformation, because of that censorship by omission, we're not able to have the conversations and the debates that are necessary around the processes that are taking place in Latin America. So I was Red Pepper editor, a left-wing magazine here for a number of years, and I've always sought to try and create a space where we can have a reasonable, respectful, rational debate about issues that are of importance to the left. You know, at the time, I commissioned the debate on Lula, on whether he was, you know, there was a critique from the left that he was essentially a neoliberal. There was a defense of Lula. It's a very important debate that is needed, but it's a debate that is never going to happen in the mainstream because the mainstream is more interested in just smearing outright. And so because of their dereliction of duty, in a way, on the one hand, you have to counter that, so you end up being seen as almost like an activist of these governments, when in reality you're trying to, you know, do journalism and correct their inadequacies as journalists. And so that's why I think Alboraz is a very humble attempt to create a space where we can, on the one hand, report, I think, with the honesty that is missing in the mainstream around issues, create debates around, you know, today in Latin America, you have a so-called second wave of the left. You have a new generation in, for example, in Chile, a young generation that, you know, that distances itself very clearly and repeatedly from what they consider an old left in Latin America, Chavez left, the left of Nicaragua, the left of Venezuela, the left of Cuba. And it's important for the debate around what are the relative pros and cons of each position to be had. I mean, you know, we need to have a space where that debate can take place, and that's what we're trying to do. As well as creating that space, I think it's incumbent on us, and it's absolutely necessary to increase the power of independent media, the reach of independent media, because of this suppression by big tech, because of the attacks by the UK government and its allies, essentially. So we have to come together and coordinate coordinate better, basically, because certainly the one thing that the right do very well is coordinate. So we need to come together. We need to probably go to the social forces, the trade unions, and have a conversation around how the trade unions should really, and it's not a critique because it's not as if I've been there, but you know, we need to have a debate on the left in Britain about democratizing the media, because as Matt says, you know, he quoted the two presidents, I think it's clear that any process of social transformation that doesn't engage with the process of democratizing the media and addressing the bad faith smears and attacks that come will ultimately find it very difficult to push back on the narratives that are imposed and like imposed on populations. And because, as Matt says, the left in Latin America is, not just because I work on the region, I think it is the region where the left is winning. It's a region where there is hope, there's inspiration. I mean, in Colombia, you've got the first left-wing government since the Republic was created in 1810. So if that doesn't give us inspiration to think that we can address, we can embark on progressive politics in the UK, I don't know what can. In Bolivia, they overturned a right-wing US-sponsored coup that murdered, you know, 50 or more people in less than a year. And I think these heroic acts of resistance in Latin America are worthy of, you know, of exploration and the journalistic, and we can learn a lot from what the left in Latin America is doing, because they're actually winning. They're in power. For all their faults, for all the critiques that often the British left like to kind of pontificate about, they're not doing that right or that right, they're in power, and that's an important step forward that we should perhaps be a little bit more humble. And again, it's not necessarily a critique, but it's also, I think, worth noting that the independent media here is not uniformly also have one position. It's not like, you know, mainstream is bad, independent is all good. I think there are challenges also for indie media in Britain when it comes to foreign reporting in general, I would argue, and specifically a region such as Latin America, which has not been a priority for British media per se. So I think there's also a process of education that's needed for the British left as well to perhaps properly appreciate some of the positions and some of the roots, or perhaps have a better appreciation of what US imperialism means in practice in these regions, and how that might inform certain policy positions by governments in the region. So I'll end it there, but I think those are some of the points that I wanted to put on.
Wow. I was like, that's a 1 minute warning, but you came, that's fantastic. If I may, I'll just sum up the key themes that I've drawn from the speakers here before getting some questions from the audience. But first and foremost, I think it's really important to that everyone has brought up that Latin America, to our entire species, to this planet, represents hope. And I think that's something that all the speakers have touched upon. So that's a key theme I think we've talked about. I think it's really important to talk about how the media in the heart of an empire such as Britain really enables the exploitation of an entire continent and set of peoples, the support of mining companies and deforesting companies and of oil extraction and so forth and so on, of military coups and oppression of the worst kind. The media is the key tool in allowing that to happen, because there isn't public consent for that in this country. There's just public ignorance. And so in a way of fighting for Latin America, we have to combat that ignorance first and foremost. So then we'd start to talk about independent media. So this is the third theme, you know, and I think this is really interesting. What we're seeing here is that from the panelists alone, they reach many millions of people. The Independent Media Association, for which I work with 70 different media organisations, has a reach of about 8.5 million. But to put that into context, in 2017, the Canary alone had a reach of 12 million. And big tech and other establishment organisations have worked out how to stop independent media from reaching the audiences it once did and making that change. And so, here, again, in the heart of empire, in this room, there is an opportunity, a possibility for us to be part of the change that helps us reach those many millions, to challenge that ignorance and to challenge that consent that is given to destroy and oppress the peoples of Latin America. That's what I hope we can focus on, is that hope, but also that realisation that we can impact change. So with that being said, let's have some questions. Questions only from the floor, a minute long, tops. Take you.
I hope this doesn't sound too whimsical. I understand and am fascinated by what you've all described, and I'm just a consumer. I'm not an expert or a great analyst. But isn't some of the nonsense that the mainstream put out just laziness, just pure idleness, not being bothered to get into any facts? Isn't it nice to be sent all expenses paid to another country and get to basically get away with whatever you want and send your children to fee-paying schools and have trips home? So I'm not saying that changes what you've said in the significance of our supporting as activists independent media, but is that part of the problem?
We'll take all three questions and I'll get the responses from the panel. So we'll take number two here, and then the gentleman at the back in the corner.
You hold it? Okay. My name's Jeremy Fox. I've spent a large part of my life in Latin America, not principally in Mexico, but also in Brazil, Ecuador. I won't give you the whole list because it's almost every country. And I entirely agree on what we've heard here, but there are a few things that I think need to be added to what we've got and what has been said about the mainstream media. I was an official observer, for example, this is just anecdotal, for the Venezuelan election, presidential election in 2018. And after the election was won by Maduro, the Sunday Telegraph, because I could get the newspapers on the website, so I knew what they were all saying, published a great big photograph of Maduro celebrating his victory in front of an empty square. Unfortunately, the editor of the Sunday Telegraph hadn't talked to the editor of the Daily Telegraph, which published the same picture with the crowd there. Now, I happened to know that the crowd was there because I was there as well. So it's not just a question of the media passing over the truth. It actually disinforms. After the election, I'm going to be very quick, don't worry. The BBC sent Ola Guerin, who's a Middle Eastern correspondent, who gave an appalling report on, and she doesn't know anything about that in America, an appalling report on what was going on in Venezuela, which is entirely right-wing. What I want to ask, however, is what do we do here in the UK about the misinformation that reaches into the heart of our political arrangements, our political parties. The Tories are a hopeless case, of course, but what can we do with the forthcoming Labour government, as we think is what we're going to get, to turn their face in favour of the left-wing movements in Latin America, in particular in Venezuela, Cuba, etc.?
Okay, that's really interesting. Excellent. And thank you to the gentleman at the back.
Just to say, first of all, thank you to all four of you and everyone else, because I know it can be a thankless task at the best of times. So genuinely thank you, because of the risks that you take. Let's be perfectly honest with your own safety as well. So thank you for that. Second thing, I just wanted to say it frustrates me enormously that the unions have not got together and linked in with the likes of yourselves to actually deliver a proper news service and information service, because they have the money and they're just not doing it. And it drives me mad, especially when you consider the union links in Latin America as well. It makes no sense why that's not happening, apart from political reasons. And yes, if they classify one report on arms trade and that, there'll be a few unions that might be a bit reluctant on that. But that frustrates me, wondering why that hasn't happened. And thirdly, as Pablo's touched on, I think personally, Jeremy Corbyn's moved forward the left probably 30 years in this country in a short space of time. Yes, didn't win all the rest of it, but tremendous. And that link now, where you see more and more people here, I think, and elsewhere, with Latin America, I think the arrogance of the British left to knock the chip off the shoulder, because being there and done it so many times in Latin America, as you've all touched on, Jeremy's the link now. And it has been the link in that, in terms of making it more aware. And I just wonder if there's anything else you can think that will bash through that arrogance and move us forward, basically.
Okay, brilliant. Those are really interesting questions. So I'll bring those to the panels. I'll specifically come back on something to do with the unions, because there's a big project that I'd like to touch on. But does laziness play a big part in the misinformation, disinformation? As brought up, there is clear disinformation on purpose as well as like passing over things. So what do we do about that, specifically in relation to the political parties in the UK? And and finally, how can we sort of destroy the arrogance of the British left around Latin America? I'm going to start with the order of the speakers. I'm going to start with you, Matt.
Okay. On the first point, it's an interesting one, and one that I have personal experience of, because I worked for the Financial Times for 3 years and I went to Haiti, Bolivia, Argentina with them. And it's not really, it is partly laziness, in that it's an easy job when you work for the Financial Times, because you go there and everyone wants to talk to you. You call up the president or the foreign minister and they'll talk to you. And basically, if you get an interview with someone of that seniority, you've got a story in itself. It's easy to do. And in fact, client journalism is very, very easy, which is why you get paid well, and that's why it's so popular amongst the establishment. But it's also just the whole, structurally, is set up for you to get a certain type of story. And Haiti was quite an amazing experience for me on that, because I was sent there by the Financial Times to cover the aftermath of the earthquake. And it was unbelievable, the devastation. It was like, I've never seen anything like it. I don't think I'll ever see anything like it. Again, a whole city collapsed. The whole city, Port-au-Prince, living in camps. The presidential palace collapsed. Every ministry collapsed. It was like apocalypse. And I was, because I was with the FT, I was taken around by the World Bank. I was actually flown to the north of the island, to the north of the country, to go to a special economic zone that was being built by USAID and Japanese aid. And it was great, like, you know, well, it wasn't great, but I mean, it was like, if you didn't have a critical point of view, it would be great. You like meet the nice guy from the World Bank who tells you all the wonderful things they're doing for Haiti. You go to the special economic zone and it's devastation outside. You go in the special economic zone, it's paved roads. There's apparently a union, like they're getting paid. There's jobs, there's no jobs outside the gates of the SEZ. So it's all set up, and then you stay in a nice hotel. Like, for a foreign reporter working for the Financial Times or the Guardian, it all works very well. And all the ideologies, which are completely made up to justify exploitation, of course you're not going to question them, because there's no one around you is questioning them, and everything you're seeing and is put on a plate for you. Now, the interesting thing was me, that I knew what was going on. Like, in Haiti, I wanted to do the stories for the Financial Times about the shock doctrine of Haiti, the idea that they were using the earthquake as an opportunity to put through an extreme neoliberal program, which they've been trying to do since the 90s. They removed Aristide, who was the liberation leader that was elected and then was removed twice. So what I did was, I eventually left the Financial Times, and my first book, called The Racket, was about all the reporting I'd done at the Financial Times and filling in the blanks. So I went back to that SEZ that I mentioned in the north of the, and looked on the WikiLeaks cables about what was happening. And funnily enough, the whole SEZ was built on lands that had been populated by farmers that the US Embassy was talking about what we're going to do about these farmers, and they kicked them off. There was a whole dispute with the union, because the union was basically the one, it was what they call a yellow union. It was affiliated to the company. It was set up by the company and basically just a window dressing. So when you start looking underneath that kind of shiny surface, it's all artifice, it's all fake. But pretty much 100% of the journalists in the mainstream media or in the corporate media will never ever look below that surface presentation that they're fed when they go to these places. It doubles for Venezuela. I'm sure Rory Carroll was living in a nice, like, up in the hills in Caracas. Yeah. That's how it works. They reward, and very, very few people fight back against that. In fact, virtually none. So it is laziness. Laziness is part of it, but it's also just like people like status. They like money. They like to think that they're doing good, so they accept all these ideologies that tell them that what they're actually doing is helping Haitians or helping Venezuelans or whoever it is. So it's a mix of different things. It's also like quite a difficult thing to conceptualize, because there's so many different elements of why the propaganda system is like it is. Manufacturing consent was quite an interesting and innovative way by Chomsky and Herman about trying to sort of provide a conceptual framework. They came up with five filters on information and why you get a certain view of the world. I don't think that's conclusive or an extensive look, but there's many, many, many parts of it. I think laziness is part of it, but probably a small part is. Annette, should I do the other two before I go on, or should we go?
Yes, go on.
And the second one was?
The second was when people are, like, what do we do about
misinformation? Yeah, sorry, I should have, a lot of people have said.
Especially with the political
parties. Yeah, because I mentioned that censorship by omission was the main propaganda technique, and that is true, but yes, it is also true that there is outright disinformation. I think there's less of that, because I don't need to so much, because you just, there's also this whole thing of shooting and crying. I think the Guardian are the best at this. They like destroy any progressive leader and then cry when someone like Bolsonaro, they support the coup against Dilma and then cry endlessly about Bolsonaro, or shoot Jeremy Corbyn and then cry endlessly about Boris Johnson. It's ridiculous. They are part of you are complicit in what comes next if you try and destroy progressive forces through misinformation and lies, which they did with Corbyn and for a lot of liberation leaders and that. So I think, what do you do? I think Pablo's thoughts were quite insightful, actually. I think, like, it is true that it draws energy away from doing the journalism, but you have to engage, because they have a handle on the popular mind. So, Annette, I mean, it's a thankless task, but, like, we're in the margins. That's how they don't put us in prison unless you're Julian Assange in this country, but they what they do is they just marginalise you, so you're throwing stones from the outside and trying to have an impact. But I think that there's no silver bullet, you just got to keep doing it. And I think it is important to keep attacking, not attacking, but, you know, like taking on journalists that are publishing falsehoods. And one of the amazing ways to do that that we didn't have 10, 20 years ago is Twitter. Like, these people like hate Twitter. Establishment journalists hate Twitter because they sat on their fat asses for like the last 100 years just pumping out establishment propaganda, and no one had any mechanism to like pull them up on it. And now anyone can sort of tweet Rory Carroll and say, hey mate, you just said an outright falsehood about Chavez or whatever it is. So I think there's many, we need to utilise those new technologies that allow us to take on these people, and that's and push back against the propaganda against social media. Because although, yes, it's controlled by big tech and there's hundreds, countless problems with it, it is a democratising tool. And part of the attacks on it are about the establishment forces not wanting to have an open debate that Pablo said we should be pushing, which I agree with. The last one was the trade unions. Yeah, again, I thought what Pablo said is again correct, and what you said is correct. For me, like, we're, unless you have a structural opponent to the corporate establishment system, you can't do anything. We're kind of like so marginal, and there's no infrastructure for alternative media. And the only structural opponent of that whole system that we're fighting is organized labor. And they have money, and they have the right ideas and the right philosophy, and they're on the right side. So I think that it has to try. I have no idea why trade unions in this country are not pumping money into independent media. It has to happen. And until that happens, I don't think on a sort of grand scale anything's going to change, because you need that level of money, you need that level of infrastructure, you need that level of institutional support to really be a problem for the mainstream. So hopefully it will happen. I don't know if the discussions are happening internally in unions. I know that is it Sharon Graham? She's really good. She's the new newish general secretary of Unite. She has talked about, I think at one point she said, we're going to withdraw all our money from Labour and put it into independent media. I was like, well, yeah, duh. Should have done that, like, not her, but Unite should have done that. Like, maybe it would have been all right with the Corbyn period, but like, Labour have been actively attacking the interests of their members for decades. So hopefully that will happen. It needs to happen. And that for me is... That's me. Right. For me.
I'm going to bring in the remainder of the panel with a sort of proviso that's about three minutes each, and I'll do a summation on, just because there's some specifics around the trade union stuff that might actually go to answering some of the questions. I'll come in on that afterwards. So, Natalia.
I think it's interesting because even though I'm part of like the international media covering Latin America, I'm actually from Brazil. So the fact that I am from Brazil, I studied politics in Latin America, and being from there, I would think in theory that they would like me, but no, I feel like that they hate me most because I'm from there. And I can quickly call them out when they are being extremely ignorant. And the thing that they really don't like, and this is also very interesting, is they are extremely, and I would say, I don't know, colonial superiority, racism, whatever. They always will think that they know more than us, that they can educate us about our own issues, about what we need. That's why, even though I have never had one single interaction with the Latin American editor of The Guardian, he blocked me on Twitter. I never knew why. And those people, they live extremely privileged lives. And that's not just because they have good jobs and they are living in the global south. No, but because they are sheltered. They only live amongst, not even like... rich people from Latin America. They are always around the expats. They only do things with themselves. So they never actually experience Latin American in reality. And again, of course, they have to keep the people who are financing them happy. So of course they will continue to publicate lies The Guardian, like we have on Twitter, on Brazil Wire Twitter, we have an ongoing thread about an article that we are always updating called The Strange Case of The Guardian. That it's basically, the article is basically listing all the times, like Matt said, that they were supportive of the coup, that they were throwing stones at the Workers' Party, but then crying about Bolsonaro. So who can understand them? And just to finish, I would like to say that that's why I have a joke with Dan Hunt from Brazil Wire. Please, British people, stop sending Tories to report on Latin America.
We'll do our best. So a lot of them are in disguise, though. So, Pablo.
Yeah, just quickly. So, lazy, yes, absolutely. Olga Guerin, I was in Venezuela making a documentary when she was there reporting. She said that she couldn't get... There were two protests, one an opposition one, which she went to, and there was a pro-government one. She said it was impossible logistically to get to the pro-government conveniently. I got there in about 15 minutes in a car. So that's obviously a lie. Yeah. Absolutely lazy. Just a couple of BBC editor in Venezuela wanted to interview people in the barrio, but they had to speak English. So, okay. The Guardian guy, I'm here, first time, 25 years, I don't speak Spanish and I know nothing about Latin America. So they're lazy, ignorant, they have they're extremely ignorant. They come from a social circle, they are, they represent the establishment because they are the establishment. I mean, the middle and upper tier of the BBC is, I think, 77% private school educated. Lower down, it's probably in the upper echelons, given that 6% of the population go to private school. This is the social circle. The Guardian guy lived in Altamira, the richest part of Caracas, with the elite, with the expats. They hang out with the ambassadors, with the foreign ambassadors. That is their world. They represent that world. Mm. So, this idea that they're speaking truth to power, they are the elite. That's where they feel comfortable. Now, added to that fact around ignorance, and all of that is, what Matt says, is an ideology, it's ideology, as that classic interview with Chomsky and Andrew Marr, where essentially he says, if you didn't believe what you do believe, you wouldn't be sitting here. Mm. So they filter out that you do get one or two that fall through the cracks, but they're kind of quickly dealt with. There was an excellent journalist at the BBC for a while called Ian Bruce, who then published a book. He was a really good journalist. But these are outliers to the system. With regards to Labour, I don't think we've got time to engage with that. I'd say that, the unions would probably be the people that play a central role in a kind of education or pressure, let's call it political pressure, vis-a-vis Labour taking more progressive policy positions. I'm not particularly hopeful about that. But interestingly, in the new Labour era, and with Labour supporting Uribe, for example, and because of the misinformation of the mainstream, Guardian, etc., to the right, it was left to a TUC-funded organisation that's here today, Justice for Colombia, to essentially be the journalists that were chronicling the massacres, the daily massacres. So because of that dereliction of duty by the mainstream, it's left to NGOs and others to pick up the pieces to inform people, which is absolutely necessary because unless we actually know what our government does in our name, we can't really move forward in terms of... and I think that's partly, again, I'll be very quick, that's partly why I think the British left also sometimes have a bit of lack of knowledge because they themselves are a bit ignorant about what the British government does in their name abroad. And they don't really have an appreciation of the level of criminality that they engage in, the fact that they've stolen $2 billion from the Venezuelan government, the fact that they support neo-fascists, the fact that they support, in Brazil, in Colombia, that they support people that are committing mass crimes, and they're enabling all of this, and they do this, obviously, in Israel, and in Papua, they're supporting Israel and support a number of things. So I think until we understand properly the sort of the true level of criminality that our government does, then we can't really understand what other governments are doing in other regions to challenge this.
Brilliant. So... thank you very much. I'm going to do a summation and then I'm going to get you to give the panel a well-deserved round of applause. But I just want to focus on some things that you can take away to do or to focus on, that are practical, because often we identify the problem and sort of vague solutions. But here's some very specific things. First thing is, You may or may not have heard of this, but there's something coming up in Parliament called the Online Safety Bill. Now, the Independent Media Association and other media reform organisations are going to be lobbying about specific parts of this Online Safety Bill. This part that basically, it says that news organisations, and news organisations, if they have a registered UK address, which funnily enough would disinclude quite a lot of independent media, but does mean that the qualification used to be that if it is regulated, but establishment media, the Daily Mail, Guardian, whatever, they're not regulated. They don't actually have any duty to tell the truth. And the reason why this is important is because whatever is declared a news organisation by the UK government cannot have its social media posts taken down or be shadow banned. We need independent media to be recognised as news media. It is all regulated. All of our members are, right? It sounds like a tiny thing. It's really important. If you want to find out more on how to be involved with this, go to ima.press. That's our organisation. You can sign up for our newsletter. It comes out fortnightly, and it deals with these slightly more boring media policy things that will change media forever. If they are counted as media that can never have their stuff taken down, and we're not, we're never going to be able to challenge them through there. Secondly, do try TikTok. I know that sounds really childlike. The left has, for as long as I've been involved, I've been a club night promoter and festival organiser and event organiser. I was on Facebook in 2005. The left didn't get on there until about 2011, when it got sold to private companies. We're always 5 or 6 years behind. For progressive forces, we always seem to be extremely technophobic, right? And what people don't get about TikTok, once you get through the grimy tosh, if you follow, again, the IMA channel on TikTok, we don't put up videos, but you can see all the channels we follow. It's about storytelling. It's about human storytelling face to face. It's about looking someone in the eyes. It's not about the written word. And a lot of what the left does is communicate through the written word, which is, quite frankly, exclusionary to around about 80% of the population. Most people are not university educated and deal with information in a written form. They just don't. And if we want to create mass movements that engage with people, we have to change the way that we communicate and tell stories. So do check out TikTok. It is a revolutionary duty of yours. When we're talking about things within inside major political parties, Justice for Colombia, solidarity organisations do a lot of work with trade unions, but it is going to be trade unions that are going to be able to apply the pressure. So that brings me to the final point. Trade unions do not value independent media. They occasionally do one-on-one deals. They also don't know how to engage with independent media. We are, at the Independent Media Association, on behalf of all of these great media organisations, going to start a programme of engaging with the leadership of the trade unions, because we think there is some inclination towards supporting it. There is some money there. We need some support, again, when we start doing this, for people to publicly, if you're in a trade union, say it's your trade union rep, retweet our tweets, follow the IMA. This will help all independent media that tells the truth about Latin America. So these are the kind of boring behind-the-scenes things that I try to do instead of being the hero journalist that deep down I really wanted to be, and really someone more exciting than someone who does like a lot of databasing. But that's what we're going to be doing. I'm making a database of all the trade unions. The final thing I'll say on this, and this sounds like a bit of shade because it probably is, trade union communication departments are woefully behind the times. They think that getting on page 42 of The Guardian, which no one buys in print any longer, one line is something that, I've been told this, they literally go around the offices and high-five each other. We've a problem with understanding what communicating to people means, and they're stuck at least 50 years in the past. But not only that, their very well-paid jobs depend on them being that ignorant to it. They do not engage with independent media. They do not give quotes to independent media the way that they should. They do not support it. If you are in a trade union, you need your reps to start mentioning this and passing it up the chain. Like, it needs to actually be something that you pass motions on in your branches. You need to actually take this moment. And again, I want to draw you back in summation to that point we made earlier. We live in the heart of empire, and millions of people depend on us taking some actions. And these seem tangential and boring, but they will help the truth spread and help us create the change that we want to see. So please do that. Please give a great hand to all of the speakers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your question.
Yeah, afternoon, everyone. A special greeting to the Latin American Conference, and also a little bit about the Prisma. The Prisma is a unique and pioneering media project in the UK, focusing on immigrants and refugees and informing British and Latin American readers about their two societies. The Prisma was born in 2010. It's a weekly online newspaper, bilingual, ethical and independent, and entirely run by volunteers. We have no sponsors, no employers, and no money. Okay, now let's talk about the topic that calls today. For democracy in Latin America, 2022 was a particularly difficult year. The political landscape was consolidated and transformed. There was police repression, protests, elections, and new governments. And in the middle of it all was the press. For many journalists, alternative and independent, it was a dismal year because they were silenced in different ways. In fact, some 45 were murdered. Mexico was the country with the second highest number of journalist murders in the world, 17. It followed Haiti, and within the region it was followed by Colombia, Honduras, Brazil, Ecuador, Chile, Guatemala, and Paraguay. 86 of these murders remain in impunity. According to Reporters Without Borders, few countries respect press freedom in Latin America. Costa Rica, Jamaica, and Argentina seem to do so. The opposite happens in Brazil, El Salvador, Cuba, Colombia, Honduras, Nicaragua, Venezuela, Bolivia, Mexico, and Guatemala. In these countries, journalists have fled because of threats and persecution from those in power. Hundreds of others have been threatened, detained, or jailed, even kidnapped or disappeared. Still, others were victims of digital or judicial warfare. They also faced illegal surveillance by state security forces of their private communication and information stored on their personal and work devices, putting journalistic sources at risk. All this persecution persists today. Added to this is the use of social media by business people, politicians, and governments seeking to smear journalists and independent media outlets, which are a counter power. With some variations, the spectrum in the region is the same: permanent violations of the press freedoms, and a right-left ideological confrontation and social conflicts that impact journalist practice and polarize societies. According to Reporters Without Borders, in the world list of 150 countries, Colombia ranks as the 35th most dangerous country for journalists, especially for those working in small towns or villages. Covering stories about the environment, internal conflict, corruption, or complicity between politicians and illegal armed groups is a risk. It systematically exposes them to harassment, intimidation, and violence. The truth is forbidden. According to the Foundation for Press Freedom, in Colombia between 2006 and 2022, almost 6,000 journalists were victims of press freedom violations. During this period, president of the far-right governed Colombia. Most of the victims don't belong to the mainstream media. As is the case in other countries, in Colombia, the big media are owned by the owners of large fortunes. Here we find El Tiempo, Semana, El Colombiano, and RCN. These media have the support of the powers that be, which are on the right and far right. They have generous advertising and exclusive access to certain information. they don't denounce or expose people, films, or civil servants with similar political affiliation who contravene the law. Independence and truth do not sit for them. As a counterbalance, for a little over a decade now, dozens of alternative media, some of them independent, have emerged. They have done so in areas where violence and corruption for them cannot be hidden, even costed them their lives. They emerged because they were fed up with the failure of the traditional media to denounce the horrors of paramilitarism, guerrilla warfare, and state crimes. They arose because people stopped believing in the traditional media. There are independent, ethical, and truth-seeking media such as La Nueva Prensa, La Oreja Rota, Cuestión Pública, Verdad Abierta, La Raya, and Ruta del Conflicto, among others. They subsist on donation, voluntary work, or the support of foreign organizations. There is the case of Noticias Uno, a TV news program that was critical of previous governments, then lost its space but was saved by a crowdfunding campaign that raised enough money for it to sustain itself. Today is one of the most respected and trusted news programs in Colombia. Independent media seek to provide the information that mainstream media hide or distort, and they are therefore often victims of the circles of power. In recent years, two events have determined where independent journalism is in Colombia. One was the so-called social explosion, the national strike, which took place between 2021 and 2022. This year saw all kinds of human rights violations by security forces against the demonstrators, murders, sexual assaults, arbitrary detentions, and disappearances. There was a great silence on the part of the government, and the mainstream media not only hid the truth, but also stigmatized the demonstrators, justified the violence, and allowed impunity to run its course. Today, in the face of the ongoing investigation, they continue to act in the same way. The truth was exposed by the alternative and independent media. They reported from the scene and interviewed the victims. Thanks to them and the social media, the horror of the social explosions could not be buried. The other event was the presidential election, which, for the first time in the history of Colombia, were won by a left-wing candidate, the current president, Gustavo Petro. Before, during, and after the election, the mainstream media delivered information that was biased, manipulative, and in many cases false and defamatory. Their reporting today is more activism than journalism. They join forces to promote lies or provoke an adverse reaction to the opposition in public opinion. There are some press bodies, but none have spoken out or criticized the journalistic practices of this media. There is no independent press regulator in Colombia to monitor their practices and ethics. Meanwhile, the independent media, many of which were victims of persecution and judicial harassment and the previous governments, are fighting a tough battle, denouncing or investigating questionable activities of the armed forces, former president or public officials that are not undertaken by the mainstream media. Despite the fact that there is a different government, they still face violation of press freedom as power continues to be in the hands of the country's right and ultra-right, the economic groups and their friends who lead the public bodies. For example, the Attorney General's office sent a letter to Noticias Uno to inspect their facilities and certain information, but its real purpose was to look at the information they had and to discover their sources. Other journalists had been victims of lawfare. This is the case of some of those who work for the newspaper La Nueva Prensa, which has been subjected to years of judicial persecution and attempts to imprison them or make them leave the country. Also, on 29 June last year, the Attorney General's office ordered an inspection of the magazine Cambio, jeopardizing the confidentiality of the source. The magazine was investigating a former general accused of links to drug trafficking. There is also the case of a magazine whose editor and some of the reporters were victims of interception of home calls and emails after they published articles on crimes committed by members of the armed forces. In 2022, almost 600 violations of press freedom were committed. There were almost 700 journalists affected. The wars are the threats and judicial persecution. Judicial harassment is an effective weapon when it comes to silencing independent journalists. Unfortunately, there is nobody that really defends independent journalists, as they are only beginning to organize themselves. But today, there are many and they are making their voices heard. Without them, Colombia is condemned to a distorted truth that polarized the country even more. It's up to the independent media to ensure that power is no longer confused with the truth.